This episode is brought to you by Splash Refresher. Splash Refresher spices up my daily water intake by putting fun and hydration in one. Because as a mom, I already have my hands full. Every Splash Refresher flavor is delicious, bright, flavorful, and zero calories. I don't waste time on flavorless water I don't enjoy. I just drink Splash and I like it.
My favorite flavor is the lemon. It really does taste like lemonade.
My favorite is the mandarin orange flavor.
There's a flavor for everyone to enjoy.
Find Splash Refresher today on Amazon and Instacart or at your local Walmart, Sam's Club, or Kroger. Hello and welcome to Childproof by Betches Media. I'm Tori Phantom.
And I'm Gwenna Lathland. This podcast is dedicated to all the people who stay up way too late because no one needs you. They're all asleep, like you should be.
And to all the parents who only vaguely remember what it's like to actually sleep.
This episode's a little weird as we have both a guest and a missing Tori for most of the episode.
Yeah, we invited Dr. CJ Kinsagra, a pediatric neurologist at Duke University, to talk about kids' sleep on the podcast. Got everything scheduled, and then Kentucky, where I live, got an attitude about stuff.
The day we recorded this, Tori was getting attacked by tornadoes and bad storms.
Yeah, luckily we didn't get damaged or hurt, but 5 minutes before our scheduled interview, the sirens went off. So I was sheltering in my basement while Gwenna, who lives in Oklahoma, was talking to Dr. Kinsagra. So I'm actually as excited to hear this episode as all of you are.
So good news, bad news. We do not have a timer for this episode since we had a guest, but we're also missing a whole Tori. Before we get started, I do have to do the standard, please don't sue us or think this is what it is not. No part of this episode should be viewed as a diagnosis or medical advice. This is a discussion about pediatric sleep and sleep health. If you have questions or concerns about anything we discussed today, please reach out to your pediatrician, general physician, or a specialist in your area. Dr. CJ Kinsagra. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Give me the elevator pitch of who you are and what you do in this great wide world.
Sure. I'm a child neurologist by training. So children that have a variety of nervous system related issues. And I have done a subspecialty in sleep medicine. So day in, day out, I take care of children that have challenges with sleep.
I'm so excited to talk to you because I think when you're in the thick of it, you think all children have issues with sleep.
Yes, yes. It's super common. And I'll tell you that people have different thresholds of when it becomes a problem versus not, mm-hmm. but happy to dive into all of that good stuff.
All right. So let's start with, I'm going to say the forbidden words in the parenting realm. I'm going to say, we're going to talk about sleep training.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The minute you mention sleep training, people automatically jump to really extreme thoughts like extinction method. Just let them cry all night. That's not sleep training. I think it's safe to say, even from both of our perspectives, if you pop your baby in a crib and just walk out all night, that is not sleep training.
Yeah, 100%. And I'll tell you that I agree here. It's a highly debated issue when it comes to social media world and parenting forums, et cetera. At the end of the day, all of these techniques, they are rooted in lots of great data. You know, we have data to support safety and efficacy for a lot of the different techniques. There are four of them that have data to support them. And at the end of the day, I always tell families that, you know, sleep training is a parent choice. No one should tell you have to. Because, you know, when you look at long-term data, it's all kind of a wash. Everybody ends up doing about the same 5-6 years down the road. But there are clear short-term and medium-term benefits. So nobody should tell you that you should. In the same regard, based on the data that we have, nobody should really tell you that you shouldn't. It's a parent choice.
Yes, that's very exciting. I have three children. My oldest is now 16. She didn't get sleep trained. And I say this knowing that some god somewhere smiled down upon me because my oldest was not a bad sleeper, was really not, slept the expected amounts of time, like napped well until she didn't, and then like faded away from the naps. Great. My littles, however, outnumbered me. And so we absolutely did sleep training with them because for us as a family, we were already older as parents. I was 34 when they were born, which is not old, but in terms of having an infant in the house, it was a lot for us. Sure. We ended up sleep training And everyone's like, well, what's the name of the method? I don't know. I just kept checking on them.
Probably graduated extinction, it sounds like.
Graduated extinction, I think, is the closest term I've ever heard. But yeah, we would go in there. We would get them all settled. We'd walk out. They'd make a peep. We'd wait for it to get to a little more than some rustling. And then we, no, you're okay. And we try not to pick them up unless they'd really gotten themselves into a fit. But it worked for us, and it felt necessary for us because we were outnumbered by our own spawn. And if they continued on their own psychotic cyclical cycle of one's awake and one's not, that's the Geneva Convention outlawed that. That's torture.
You've touched on a lot of really great points, which is, first of all, you know, when you have children, each child is like a brand new child. Each child is like your first child because they're going to be doing everything completely different than your other child. And so you, and I say this because a lot of people get in this habit of, oh my gosh, you know, my first child was just a wonderful sleeper. Mm-hmm. What did we do wrong for our second child? Chances are there's nothing you did wrong. You know, just like with your first child, there may not have been something you did magically right, because a lot of this also is just the intrinsic nature of sleep. You can do everything wrong and still have a child that sleeps like a dream. You can do everything right and still have significant sleep challenges. And that's why I always tell people, please do not compare yourselves to your neighbor, Sally, who's talking about how at 12 weeks her baby was sleeping 12 hours. You just cannot compare. And it does not mean you're doing anything wrong. That's really important to know.
Yes, absolutely. There is no one right way to parent a child. There's no one right way to handle your child's relationship to sleep.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. 100%. Your child will be fine. I mean, and this is like the one thing, we're always looking for that one right answer for everything when it comes to like potty training, when it comes to feeding, when it comes to sleep and sleep training. There's no one right answer. There's a million ways to raise a healthy, thriving child. I love saying that. There's a million ways to raise a healthy, thriving, happy child. So don't worry about finding the one right answer. Find what fits for your family and for your child. Yeah. That's the goal.
Yep. When we discussed inviting you onto the show, Tori was like, well, I didn't sleep train. Tori co-slept and hybrid slept for quite a while. And you know what happened? Now our youngest children are about the same age. My children sleep in their own beds. Tori's children sleep in their own beds. We went about it with two completely separate approaches, and all of our children just sleep in their own beds now.
and I'll tell you, you know, interestingly, when, again, going back to like the sleep training data, when we look 5-6 years out at how children are sleeping, and we look at a variety of other metrics when it comes to psychosocial well-being, when it comes to anxiety, when it comes to attachment, when they look at all these different scales, 5 or 6 years down the road, it doesn't matter whether you sleep train or not. The data says that it's all kind of a wash, because so much really happens between that time until they're 5 or 6. And so that's why I'm never coming out here being like, oh, you must sleep train, otherwise you're doomed for terrible sleep, blah, blah, blah. And that's also why I tell families, no, even if you do sleep train, our data shows that attachment is fine, children do fine, it's not going to hurt them, et cetera, because that's just what the data shows. So really, you have a lot of flexibility as a parent, which is the way that it should be. Let's give you the options, you know?
I love my kids, but they grow up so fast. So shopping for clothes that will last can be difficult and expensive. But I found an easy fix with Posh Peanut. Made from viscose from bamboo, their clothes are 4 times stretchier than cotton, stretching with your kids as they grow. They're made to last, loved by parents, and approved by kids. They recently released an adorable ruffled denim line, and I am so excited. My girliest girl of a daughter is going to be living in that frilly denim from Posh Peanut all summer. Posh Peanut makes thoughtfully crafted, beautiful, and stylish clothing for kids and families designed in-house, from beautiful florals to your kids' favorite brands like Hot Wheels, Hello Kitty, and Barbie. Their pieces are made with ridiculously soft viscose from bamboo that stays soft even after multiple washes. And their high-quality fabric is 4 times stretchier than cotton, so it grows with your child and stays wearable for longer. It's also breathable and chemical-free, which means they're delicate on your baby's sensitive skin. Posh Peanut is made for infants and kids, but they also have sizing for moms and dads if you want the whole family to match. And if you're not a parent, consider this the perfect gift idea for any little one in your life. Right now, Posh Peanut is offering our listeners 20% off your first order with promo code CHILDPROOF. Go to poshpeanut.com/childproof and use promo code CHILDPROOF for 20% off your first order. That's poshpeanut.com/childproof. Promo code childproof.
Hydrating doesn't have to be boring. Splash Refresher spices it up by putting fun and hydration in one. Because as a mom, I already have my hands full. Splash Refreshers are delicious, bright, flavorful, and available in 5 craveable flavors. It has 0 sugar, 0 calories, and a splash of sweetness for a hydrating and delicious beverage you'll come back to again and again.
My favorite flavor is the lemon. It really does taste like lemonade, so I'm getting hydrated, and it just feels like I'm drinking lemonade.
Splash Refresher perfectly blends refreshing fruit flavors with just a little bit of sweetness, all with 0 sugar and 0 calories.
Available in 5 craveable flavors, wild berry, acai grape, pineapple mango, lemon, and mandarin orange, Splash Refresher is there to satisfy your need for hydration with a little flavor. There's a flavor for everyone to enjoy.
They are delicious, bright, flavorful, and hydrating, and 0 calories. So you can have fun flavored water without any guilt. Consider your hydrated self thriving.
Find Splash Refresher today on Amazon and Instacart, or at your local Walmart, Sam's Club, or Kroger. Let's say we've got a parent who chose not to sleep train. It worked well for them for the first year or so. And then now we're into the toddler years. Now we're into bed sharing, and mom, dad, parents, they are ready for that kid to not be in the queen anymore. All right. We bought you your own bed, son. Go sleep in that. What are some tips for that sort of later stage of sleep training? What's your number one tip there?
Yeah, well, the number one tip there is it comes to limit setting for toddlers. That is the main, what we call behavioral insomnia subtype. There are two kind of subtypes to what we call behavioral insomnia in children. One is sleep onset association disorder subtype, which means that they've developed a dependency on an external force to help them fall asleep each night. And that's where sleep training can help. That can persist into the toddler years. So you may have an issue with, my child still has a dependency on a caregiver. But oftentimes, once you're in like the bed, the big boy and the big girl bed, where you're trying to keep them in that bed, then it becomes a limit setting, because they can walk and they can get out of bed and they can follow you, et cetera. And so then it becomes a persistence and kind of a game of who can outlast the other one at nighttime. And so persistence and consistency.
It's the closest to a power struggle. Like, yep, your kid's going to get out of bed 37 times. That might be a low number. If you enter that knowing that this is going to be for a couple nights, you're going to be fighting this, maybe for a couple more than a couple nights, you're going to be playing this. But most of the time with toddlers, the answer is almost always what I call the 3 R's, which is reinforce, redirect, which in this case, you're just redirecting them back to bed, and repeating and repeating and repeating until you think you're going to go insane and there's no possible way this is working. And your 27-year-old is just going to be sleeping in the bed next to you.
Yeah, I know. I love those 3 R's. You know, I'll tell you that you mentioned, like, you know, 37 times. One time I had to bring my toddler back 213 times to his bed. I mean, and I'm supposed to be the pediatric sleep doc and, you know, have all
this.
But this is the consistency part. Yeah, my old children, you know, when they were born, they drop kicked me in the face regarding, you know, sleep. And I had to, you know, use all of the different techniques and stuff that I had lectured about and researched for many years on my own children, and thankfully it worked, but it's hard. You know, it is not an easy process. And so I certainly sympathize and empathize with families. You know, you can know everything about the sleep science and the people give you all this wonderful advice, and, you know, your child just may not have read all the textbooks regarding sleep and do it their own
the
way.
The audacity.
I know, right? I mean, the nerve, right? So that can happen. But I'm happy to dive into, you know, when it comes to limit setting for toddlers, they are like, they're little geniuses. They're always pushing. They're always questioning. They're trying new things. If I kick this bucket, you know, what happens? If I spill my milk, what's going to happen? They're always experimenting. And that's, you want them to do some of that experiment. That's how they're learning. You know, that's how they're learning to be people and learning where the guardrails are regarding behavior, et cetera.
Okay, so let's go for the baseline. I'm gonna give you a hypothetical that I feel is indicative of a lot of folks. So they ended up co-sleeping or hybrid sleeping, meaning your baby was in the bed. Please do so safely if you are choosing co-sleeping. Please make all the safe choices if you are choosing co-sleeping. I'm saying that very carefully. I was never able to get my anxiety to deal with co-sleeping. Like, what if I roll over on the kid? I am not a small woman.
I abide by the AAP recommendations for safe sleep, which says, you know, that first year of life, you really do not want to bed share. You should room share. You should stay in the same room.
Yes.
But you really should avoid bed sharing because adult beds just are not made for infants, unfortunately. The safety standards aren't there. The chemical testing isn't there. There's lots of reasons why you just don't want a baby on an adult bed, you know? So we're
going to put the baby in the room. The baby's in the room. They have gone their entire first year, their entire second year, sleeping in their cot or their bed in mom and dad's room. So they are very, very accustomed to the ambient noises of mom, dad, partners, parents existing in this room. They're used to the feel of that environment, and they're used to the habit of this is what bedtime looks like. This is what going down looks like. And if I cry out in the night, 5 seconds and someone is with me. Now we've gotten to our second birthday. Mom, dad, parents, partners have decided we're all done. It is time for you to go to big boy room with your big boy bed. They get a safe toddler bed. They outfit the whole room. They have explained the kid gives total buy-in in daylight hours. Come bedtime, absolute meltdown because this is not where we sleep.
Yes, yes. So a couple things there. One is, when do you transition into a big child bed? When do you transition out of the crib? And my party line here is wait as long as humanly possible, as long as it's still safe based on the manufacturer's recommendations for crib rail length, et cetera. And that typically is right about the nipple length. Once you're getting the rail is below the nipple height, or if the child is actually showing signs of trying to climb out of the crib and almost successful, that's from a safety standpoint, yes, you got to be out of the crib. But if you can get closer to 3 years of age, the longer you wait, the more our children can develop these this understanding of their environment, more regulation skills regarding being able to stay in the bed, et cetera, et cetera. So my recommendation here is to wait. Don't say, oh, my kid's 18 months and seems to really be hating the crib. I'm going to put them in a Lightning McQueen car bed now. That always crashes and burns. No pun intended, but it's always usually a failure, you know? So you want to be really, really cautious with that approach. Now, if you're going to transition your child into their own bed, you want to, ideally you want to do it stepwise. And so you ideally have wanted to already transition them when they're still in the crib. If you're taking them out of the crib and now putting them into bed, now in a whole new environment, that is a lot of changes all at once. So if you can do it in a more graduated way, that's ideal. Now, if you're doing all the right things, you've set up nighttime routine, I always say you want to end the routine with calm, relaxing, enjoyable activity in the room where the child is going to be for the rest of the night, because you want the room to be associated with good juju, right? Good feelings. Yes. You don't want that to be a place that they go to once the fun is over, because then the room becomes a place where the fun ends, right? And so you want to continue a little bit of the routine in that room. Now, when that routine is done and you have a child that's protesting staying in their room, the main question is, does your child have underlying anxious tendencies? Because that's where the approach changes. If your child truly has anxious tendencies where, you notice during the day there's lots of issues with separation, they appear truly fearful at nighttime, that's a distinction between pushing limits versus, okay, my child might be anxious. And the approach tends to be much slower with a child that might have some underlying anxiety. So we want to make that distinction. Sometimes anxiety is hard to really kind of pick up in a child. Sometimes it presents with, a little bit of behavioral outbursts and, irritability, as opposed to truly saying, oh, I'm scared or I'm worried. So you have to be a little bit in tune. Usually parents are pretty perceptive to say, yeah, my child does have anxious tendencies. Yeah, we go out somewhere, or I drop them off to daycare and it has been a struggle for a really long time. And separation is always a challenge, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the first question I ask. If they tend to have anxious tendencies, then I like to do a slow, gradual withdrawal of parental presence at nighttime. And that's through a technique known as camping out technique, where parent starts by giving them support at the start of the night. The child is in their crib or in their bed. The caregiver is right there next to them until they fall asleep. If they wake up at night, the caregiver is right back in there, helping them transition back to sleep, however many times is needed. But still, every time they go to sleep, the child is doing so in their own room. And then each week, the caregiver distances themselves a little bit more from the crib or the toddler bed. So instead of sitting on the bed, now they're sitting next to the bed. And when the routine is done, and then waiting there until the child falls asleep, then closer to the door, then right outside the door, but still within earshot. So slow, gradual withdrawal of parental presence, all with the goal of building the child's confidence in their own ability to fall asleep, feeling safe, being protected, feeling nurtured, all that important stuff if your child has anxiety.
Now, this should be stated when we're talking about moving further and further away. At no point are you expected to just let your child cry it out. This is not The minute they make a sound, mama, yep, right here.
You're right there. You're literally in the room. You're like right. You're right there with them. The whole goal is once you're in the toddler years, if they are getting up, and again, this is for toddlers. This is for children that are, you know, can willfully leave the bed and come follow you, etc. This is for toddlers that, you know, if once they leave the bed, I tell parents, you know, you don't want this to turn into an emotional situation. You don't want to, you know, you don't want to beg. You don't want to plead. It's just a very matter of fact. You know, Billy, it's time for bed. We love you. We're gonna talk in the morning, and you bring them back to bed, and then you go back and sit in that location. And then right. Billy's gonna leave again because Billy does not like this. But you know, you kind of same approach. Billy, it's time for bed. We love you. We're gonna talk about this in the morning. Same right. consistent approach. We're not gonna get the emotion level high. We're gonna keep it boring. We're gonna keep it cool, and then getting him repeatedly back into bed. That consistent response really is the root of all behavioral kind of modification for children. Having a consistent response to what they're doing so that they understand this is kind of what's going to be happening. And
reinforce, redirect, and repeat.
That's right. That's, absolutely.
I feel that's like 98% of parenting until about the age of four when they've got a lot more language on board.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. It's amazing what a little bit of consistency can do for you. For sure.
I love my dog Sansa. She is the cutest little mush. I've had her for 6 years now, literally would do anything for her. But something I didn't think about before having a dog is pet insurance. So if you have a dog or are thinking about getting a dog, you should check out ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/betches. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/betches. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/betches. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance.
Let's discuss the second element of sleep health for kids. Why is a 5-minute nap in the car right before you pull in the driveway the exact same effect as a full 8 hours of nighttime sleep in their bed?
Yeah, you know, it all comes down to what's known as the homeostatic sleep drive, which is there are two main things that regulate why we feel the way we do throughout the day. When we feel sleep, when we feel awake. One of them is the circadian rhythm. That's going on in the background 24 hours a day. Little ups and downs. That's why we feel sleepy after lunch because you have a little bit of a plateau/dip. Yep. The other one is the homeostatic drive. Our brain actually keeps track of how long we've been awake. And it does it based on breakdown products that are binding to receptors in our brains and telling us, I've been awake for this long. When you fall asleep, and if you take that short nap, that homeostatic drive, that drive to push to sleep has now dropped a bit. It's dropped a little bit. And if you do it close to the evening hours, that little bit of a drop can make it much harder to then rebuild back up to where you need to build to get a child to fall asleep naturally on their own when it's normal bedtime. So that's why, you know, the goal is to have what we call that wake window, that longer period of time, you know, right for the last nap till bedtime to help with that process of falling asleep.
I know that when my twins were little and we were still getting to, especially when we started doing things like dropping, when we went from two naps a day to one nap a day, and then when we eventually dropped that final nap, which happens for every kid in somewhat different positions, but for the most part, when does that nap finally drop off on average? I know every kid's a little different.
Yeah, between 3 and 5 years is typical for the last nap to go away.
Which makes sense because we were just about to hit our fourth birthday and both of my littles were like, no, absolutely not. But what we struggled the most with was our doctor said, first of all, our doctor maintains that the witching hour is real and it is entirely based on missing that. He called it the melatonin window, not the window in which you give melatonin, but the window in which their melatonin got to peak. They should have gone to bed at that point. You missed that window And now they've got the second wind. Now witching hour has begun. Now we went from tired and just about ready to bed to all hell has broken loose.
Yeah, yeah. I can tell you based on what we know of the sleep science and sleep physiology, why we think there could be this witching hour, which is, mm-hmm. you know, our circadian rhythm, the alerting signal peaks for most of us. And when we're adults, it peaks right before it's time for bed. For, mm-hmm. for children, oftentimes their sleep drive, that homeostat, that second process is so high that they're still able to fall asleep, you know, even though that circadian rhythm peak mm-hmm. is still rising. So they're asleep when the time that it peaks. Now, if you miss it, you know, and now the circadian rhythm alertness is increasing, yes, you might find that your child has a second wind phenomenon. They have increased amount mm-hmm. of energy, et cetera, and they're just harder to settle down. That doesn't mean that the sleep drive still isn't building. It is, okay. But you just have to wait to kind of get over this peak and then come out on the other end for things to settle back down. The other issue is once you're sleep deprived, yes, that can be a little bit activating. It can cause a little bit of irritability and impulsivity and mm-hmm. hyperactivity. And that can also contribute to this milieu of challenge and second wind at nighttime. So both of those could be playing a role. You know, my goal here is when your child appears sleepy and tired, yes, try to get them to sleep at that time.
That's the time to aim. It's super convenient when they do that at 4:30 in the afternoon, though.
Yeah, that's a challenge. Yeah. But it's usually moving bedtime a little bit earlier if you're finding lots of struggles at nighttime can be helpful.
I know in our family, we have prioritized little sleep. My district, against my wishes, starts the little school really early. They have to be at school around 7:15, which means our parents are like, they'll FaceTime. Hey, can we FaceTime the kids? Sorry, it's 6:30. We've started the bedtime routine. We can't be on screens and on the phone. They're like, it's 6:30. I was like, I'm not the one who started school at 7:15. And if we need time to get up, we need to be getting up between 6 and 6:30. And my fives need about 12-ish hours of sleep. I got to leave room for the bedtime routine and actual falling asleep time. I'm not even able to give them a full 12 hours just because that's not how daylight works. It's your circadian rhythm. It's got to be that or something.
Yeah. Gosh, if there's one thing I wish schools would do, particularly middle and high schools, would just be starting later, you know, and we have great data on this. You know, you start later because by nature, middle schoolers and mostly high schoolers are more night owls. Thankfully, you know, when we're little, when we're toddlers and early elementary, we tend to be morning people. And so that earlier start time, although it leads to really early bedtime, as you mentioned, that earlier start time can be more tolerable. But once you're hitting the middle school and definitely high school years, early start times are miserable because it just doesn't line up with the body clock.
Let's talk about preteen and teen sleep health, because we as parents are incredibly aware of sleep health for infants, mainly because that is directly impacting our own sleep health. So we are very, very aware when toddlers, but then we fast forward into the preteen and the teen years, and bedtimes are starting to no longer be enforced for a various number of reasons. They'll stay up really late on Saturday because there's no school. There's no need to be up at a certain time. Teen sleep health is tremendously deprioritized. What would you say to a parent who is trying to have these conversations with their teenagers? You've got to go to sleep. Staying up till the fact that you can does not mean you should.
Yeah. Yeah. Number one, I'll say that they probably can't hear it from you because they don't care. You know, they don't care what you have to say. They're teenagers, you know.
Facts.
That's number one. Number two, yeah, tell them to follow me on social. I'll tell them, you know, and they'll be that, oh, that cool doctor on social media is telling me I should sleep. So I should sleep. Yeah. No, it's kind of funny. You know, we talk about when it comes to the Huberman podcast and all the, you know, various debate around this, it's interesting that, you know, young adults are still listening to him and are actually prioritizing sleep because he says to, you know, and so you have to have somebody else saying it. So that's number one. Number
that makes
two,
sense.
And this is the battleground, you know, sleep is oftentimes this flashpoint. It's this battle zone for adolescents and their parents. We have to also understand that the teenage physiology, the sleep physiology, is that sometimes even if you get them to bed early, they cannot sleep. They physically can't fall asleep. And the reason is because many of them do have what we call delayed sleep-wake phase syndrome, which is just a fancy term that says their circadian rhythm naturally delays. You naturally mm-hmm. become a night owl during the teenage years, just like you're naturally a morning person during your toddler years. And you're naturally a morning person when you hit your golden years, when you're in your 70s and 80s, you tend to be, that's why the assisted living facility supper starts at 4 p.m., right? They tend to want to go to bed very, very early. So this is also a natural, and parents are likely to think, oh, it's because they're on their phone and they're on their screens mm-hmm. and they're doing all this stuff at nighttime. Well, that could also make things a little bit worse and perpetuate the problem, but they're still night owls by nature. And that's why they can sleep until the afternoon on the weekends. Mm-hmm. So please understand that just telling them to go to sleep does not equate to going to sleep. Just them laying down in their bed does not equate to laying down in bed. So there has to be a little bit of parent understanding that, yes, my child by nature has turned into a bit of a night owl. Now, what can you do to support them? First and foremost, you have to find their motivation to change.
You have to find their buy-in. How many times have you heard us on this podcast say you have to find their buy-in?
Absolutely. They have to want to make the change, because you cannot mm-hmm. go in there and turn that switch off. This is something that really is in their control. And as when it comes to those power struggles between the adolescents and their parents, they're in control here. They can decide mm-hmm. when they're going to truly turn their brain off. What you do, find their motivation to change, ideally. And then when it comes to night owl tendencies, the main signals are really light exposure. Light exposure is the main signal. And so what we usually tell our families is there are a couple things you can do. One, try to avoid bright lights for 30 minutes prior to bed if you tend to have these night owl tendencies. Get a good amount of light in the morning when you wake up, ideally for a prolonged period of time. So turn on lights, open up the blinds if it's daytime outside. Try to keep that schedule the same on the weekends. And now this is the problem. On the weekends, if a teenager is staying up 2, 3, 4 hours past their bedtime on a school night, and then they're sleeping in 2, 3, 4 hours on Sunday, Saturday, and Sunday.
We've taken that delay and we've bumped it even further back now.
That's right. They've flown from New York to California over the weekend. That's essentially what they're doing with their timing, right? And so you're asking them on Sunday night to fly back from California to New York time. They are perpetually jet lagged. This is what we call social jet lag. They're perpetually jet lagged without even traveling because of what they're doing to themselves over the weekends. This is what night owls tend to do over the weekend.
That explains so much about my own teenager.
Yes. So ideally trying to have them stick to as close as you can. I mean, they're going to live their lives. I mean, they're teenagers. They're going to be out late with friends, et cetera. I'm not trying to limit their fun, but try to keep that wake up time roughly similar on the weekdays when you can. Now, they also have to make up for lost sleep. So this is a struggle. It's like, well, they didn't sleep enough during the weekday and now they're making it up on the weekend. I get it. You want them to make up for their time for sure. But at the same time, you don't want to let them extend their sleep too much, because then it starts all over again on Sunday night. This is where melatonin actually has data to support it. And I'm not going to talk about the dosing. I'm not going to tell you where to get it from, because this is a conversation to have with your pediatrician. But low doses of melatonin can actually help advance the circadian rhythm. That's where it's actually helpful. And so in some situations, that can be necessary as well.
Let's discuss melatonin again. Every case is different. We are now wandering into even deeper territory where, before you make the decision to give a stimulant, a non-stimulant, a vitamin, or a supplement to your child or to introduce it into your diet, please check with your doctor. Even something that we naturally produce like melatonin needs to be discussed. I, for instance, cannot take melatonin because my body does not process synthetic hormone very well. So melatonin's off the table for me. I know this about myself. My children are not similarly affected. So they have had melatonin. Well, my oldest one has had melatonin from time to time. But tell me about melatonin. Is it a yay or nay or a sometimes?
It's a yay if you're using it for the right indications. And this is also one of the failings of our medical system, which is we're not taught anything about sleep disorders in school. I mean, if we may have like a lecture or two during medical school, almost nothing during residency. And so and I don't say this as a knock on my pediatrician colleagues, but they just probably either don't have the time or haven't been taught how to take care of sleep disorders, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. They're just not prioritized. So I'll tell you that I'll give you the general guidance, but even if you take it to your pediatrician, they might say, oh, just try a handful of melatonin. but realize that that's probably because that's the limitations with our medical education. You know, it's not their fault. And they only have like 20 minutes during these checkups to like address everything. So melatonin, here in the U.S., it's not FDA regulated, so they can put whatever they want to in these bottles. There have been lots of studies that show lots of different concentrations of melatonin, lots of other weird additives like serotonin, cannabidiol in some of these bottles. So you have to be wary of where you're getting it from. It has to be a reliable source first and foremost. And then you have to use it for the right indication. Melatonin is what I call the dark hormone. It tells your brain it's dark outside. It's not necessarily, it doesn't have huge like sleep-inducing properties for most children. It has more of a circadian rhythm adjusting property. So it's like a, it's an internal body clock shifter. And that's why it has great data to support its use when it comes to children that have these circadian rhythm disorders where they're super delayed and they can't make it to school in time. Or it's useful for shift work and jet lag, all of which are trying to rapidly adjust your circadian rhythm timing. And so those are, those are areas where it actually has the data to support it. Interesting, you know, caveat, nocturnal animals also secrete melatonin at night. And for them, their melatonin tells them, hey, you should be awake at nighttime. So again, it doesn't have that like sleep inducing property. It's just, hey, it's dark outside. Do what you do when it's dark outside. Yes, it can be used if you're, if you have night owl tendencies and you're trying to advance. Again, super low dose is actually the way to go. And then the timing is most important. We're talking like usually 4 to 6 hours prior to bedtime. But talk to your pediatrician if they feel like you are in the right criteria to try it. In some countries, it's actually by prescription only. So we take melatonin kind of for granted and say, ah, it's just over the counter. It's no big deal. But the more we learn about it, you know, we certainly want to avoid high doses and prolonged exposure if you can, just because, you know, we're learning more and more about how it could affect potentially hormonal axes and things like that. So,
okay. Okay, good. All right. We have time for just one more little thing. If you could matrix style upload one piece of information about pediatric sleep health or pediatric sleep practices, one piece of information to every parent or person who deals with pediatric sleep. I know it's a hard question. I didn't prep you for that one.
If I could upload one thing, I would say that sleep disruption in children has a different manifestation than it does in adults. And it presents more in a behavioral fashion, whereas in adults, it presents more with fatigue and sleepiness. And so if you're seeing a behavioral issue or you're seeing signs of ADHD, impulsivity, et cetera, always think about sleep quality and quantity. That's, I think, an important piece of information.
So, you know, all those people that email us, hey, what do I do about this behavior? Hey, what do I do about this behavior? There are things that we may be able to advise on how to do that behavior. But included in the conversation is you have to find the why. We're going to ask you that every time. You have to find the why. The why might be they didn't get great sleep. They're struggling a little bit with their sleep. That could be the why of why your child will not stop being a complete dick about this one thing.
Well, I will also say that, you know, when it comes to sleep disruption, sleep apnea is something that's commonly not screened for and missed in children. And so I always say snore plus one more. If they snore and have one other thing, like hyperactivity during the day, like challenges with, you know, focus in school, impulsivity, et cetera, or they have other signs or symptoms. You can have failure to thrive as a really young child. You can have anatomical changes that can make you more predisposed. Think about sleep apnea, because it's usually caused by tonsils and adenoids in the back of the nose that are hypertrophied that could be causing airway obstruction. So something else to keep in mind. About a quarter of children that snore regularly actually have obstructive sleep apnea that needs to be treated.
Okay. That's good to know. That's excellent to know. Thank you so much for joining us on Childproof. Where can folks find you on social media?
Yeah. Any platform or social media is consumed, I'm probably there. I'm That Sleep Doc on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Facebook. Yep.
And Sujay, you do have a book that is available on Amazon. Tell us more about that.
Sure. Yeah. It's called My Child Won't Sleep. It's meant to be a 50-page get to the point, step-by-step, high-yield instruction manual for the common behavioral issues when it comes to all the different sleep training approaches for infants, when it comes to limit-setting approaches for toddlers, when it comes to insomnia and delayed sleep-wake phase for adolescents. It has kind of step-by-step instructions. The goal is you can read it in an hour. The time it takes for a child to nap, you can become a mini sleep expert. That's the goal.
And that is available on Amazon.
It's on Amazon, and I talk a lot about all the stuff in the book on my social media platforms as well.
Okay. So we will drop the link down there. Be sure to pick that up as soon as you're done listening to us. If people are going to take some of the information that they learned from this episode to their health provider, how do you start that conversation? Hey, doc, my kid doesn't sleep.
Yeah. So certainly I would bring sleep issues. If it's become a challenge for you, bring them to your pediatrician. And if your pediatrician feels comfortable handling it, great. Many of them do. If not, tell them to consider referring you to a sleep specialist, which many places throughout the country will have a pediatric sleep physician. They usually specialize either in neurology or pulmonology, okay, send them to a sleep physician. Or if they're having insomnia tendencies, sleep psychologists are also our wonderful colleagues that can help deal with sleep challenges.
All right. I learned a whole new branch of medicine I didn't know existed. All right. Thank you so much, Sujay.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much.
Well, I'll be getting those books immediately. I don't have babies, but I still want to understand more about kids' sleep. If you have a guest you'd like to hear us chat with, email us at childproof@betches.com.
Be sure to follow us across social media. I'm Mama Cusses in most places, and they are Tori Phantom on TikTok and Instagram.
And so you don't miss an episode, be sure to subscribe to Childproof on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Don't forget to leave us a rating on Apple and Spotify. We love hearing from you. And remember, sometimes our kids are assholes.
And sometimes it's us.
And also, we all probably need a nap.
I need a nap.
Childproof is produced by Rebecca Salzmacat. Editing by Rebecca Salzmacat. Social media by Lauren Salome. Guest booking by Allie Friedlander. Be sure to follow us at Betches Moms on Instagram and send your email to childproof@betches.com.
Thank you to our sponsor, Splash Refresher. Meet the water beverage that loves self-care as much as you. Just because you have to hydrate doesn't mean it has to be tasteless. Splash Refresher makes hydration deliciously easy, perfectly blending refreshing fruit flavors with just a little bit of sweetness, all with zero sugar and zero calories.
Available in 5 craveable flavors, there's a flavor for everyone to enjoy. My favorite flavor is the lemon.
The mandarin orange is my favorite flavor. Consider your hydrated self thriving. Find Splash Refresher today on Amazon and Instacart or at your local Walmart, Sam's Club, or Kroger.
Betches.